Hey there, fellow travelers. Welcome to the Tolkien Road, episode 257. Greta, what's up?
Hey, you know, the huge.
The huge?
Yeah. What's up with you?
Not a whole lot. Just keeping it real. Mm-hmm. Keeping it real for another episode of the Tolkien Road. On this episode, we are going to be discussing kind of a grab bag of topics again. Yes. I'm calling this one, at least for right now, I don't know if this will show up on the title card, but Estelle, Enya, Elios, etc.
So, oh, I like the alliteration there.
Yes.
It's good. Good stuff.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get started, we'd like to give a double up air five to our patrons. Special thanks to this episode's executive producers. Oh, sorry, we got to do that double up air five first. We'll go ahead and thank the executive producers. Andrew T., John R., and Ms. Anonymous. Thanks. Rolled right on through that double up air five, though. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Whoopsh. Boom.
Nice. I think we get better every week.
Oh, it's getting synced up for sure.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's all that practicing.
We're just in sync like Justin Timberlake and Lance Bass.
Boom.
Boom.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Please support the Tolkien Road by visiting patreon.com/Tolkien Road. Becoming a patron lets you support the show in a tangible way and lands you some awesome perks. And don't forget, you can now make an annual pledge and get 1 month free. Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes and other podcasting platforms. If you are a 5-star fan of the Tolkien Road, you can really help us out by heading over to iTunes or your preferred source for the show and dropping us a rating and review. When you do that, it helps get the word out about the Tolkien Road, which helps us to keep on...
evering on.
That's right.
I didn't have to look at the notes.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
I'm on today.
That's what we're all about, evering on over here. You're not just on, you're ever on.
I am ever on. Mm-hmm. Capital E-V-E-R, on.
Ever. Hey, and you can drop that 5-star rating and be just like Caroline04 over on Apple Podcasts, who is a new listener, gave us 5 stars and said, just started listening, and so far I appreciate John and Greta's depth into J.R.R. Tolkien. Learning what he said in his letters and learning about his life makes Middle-earth a more fascinating place than when I first read the book so many years ago.
Oh, nice. I like that. I think that's kind of what we're all about here on the Tolkien Road, right?
That's right.
Deepening appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know it.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you, Caroline.
Thank you very much, mm-hmm. Caroline. It's time for the weekly Tolkien Road Air 5 for all of those watching us on YouTube. 3, 2, 1.
Whoopsh.
I gave you the 3 there a couple of times.
Yeah, you did.
Sure, if you were ready.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. You too can be a part of the weekly Tolkien Road Air 5. Give us your best whoopsh in the comments below. Just like GGQ did on our last episode, right? She commented whoopsh. So that's how we're going to do it from now on. So that's kind of like, you know, you're reporting in for that episode of the Tolkien Road on YouTube. You give us that whoopsh in the comments. So
we let people know how to spell that, because I don't quite know how to spell it.
How do you think you spell it?
Well, I kind of cheated.
I kind of want to see how people are going to spell
it. I kind of looked at your notes. But if I hadn't looked at your notes, I'm trying to think. I probably would spell it W-H-U-P-I-S-H-T or E-E-S-T. I'm not sure. Wapisht.
I think you just spelled out something that would be an obscenity, so I don't know if we want people putting that. So
did I? Well, if I did, it was unintentional. Sorry, guys. Wait, do you want to tell us the correct way to spell wapish?
No, I want to see what people come up with.
Okay.
If I don't know that there is a correct way of doing it so far, unless we're just going to call GGQ's example the correct way because she did it first. But
I feel like it needs to start with W-H-U-H, actually.
Well,
okay. Anyway, I'm getting us off track. Sorry.
There's a little challenge for all of you listeners. Tell us what you think it should be.
Yeah, tell us how to spell.
Maybe we'll weigh in on the official way here soon.
Sounds good.
By the way, subscribe and click that notify bell if you're over on YouTube. Make sure to do that so that you can be a part of what we are doing over here on YouTube. And make sure to check out the rest of our video library on YouTube as well, which is already large and growing weekly. We're getting close to that 1,000 subscriber mark over there, y'all. So, you know, just head on over there. Head on over there. Get that. That is a big milestone for us. We're going to be able to do a whole lot more over there. I want to do some live streams once we pass that threshold. Real excited about getting that over the the hump of the 1,000 subscribers. So, you know, that'll help us just do cooler stuff over there, right? So the sky's kind of the limit. So
to help us out.
Make it happen.
Help us reach the sky,
even if
guys.
You are a podcast listener, you can go see our smiling faces. Here, we'll smile for you. There you go. All right. So, another sort of grab bag-ish episode this week.
I like grab bags.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the one last week. And, mm-hmm. you know, we had really great feedback on that one last week. And, you know, so often I get into... I have these ideas for topics I want to cover. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'll be honest with you all, like, doing one of those episodes is often, it's like writing, you know, it's like when you had to write a term paper for school, and it's like you're trying to cram it in towards the end. And, you know, because I have an internal desire to want to do it very well. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, though, you know, I just want to kind of sit back and have a conversation with you guys and just kind of see where it goes. A lot of times it is like that on this show, but last week we did that a little bit. I kind of took the controls off a little more, and I just relied on the feedback and the correspondence. And, you know, over time, I mean, I'm still going to do topics where it's like we're going to focus on a specific topic. But over time, especially as we get more and more into this YouTube thing, and if we do start doing live streams on a more regular basis, I'm hoping it can be kind of an interactive thing, right? Where, you know, we just show up and we talk about whatever you guys want to talk about. So maybe come with a prepared list of stuff that's important. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun, because we're going to get to a point here in the next year or so where there's going to be so much to talk about on a regular basis, yeah. with Tolkien things that, you know, we're almost just going to have to do that. Like, just sit down and talk about it all.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
All right. Well, I guess all that is to say is that we have a pretty amazing community of Tolkien super fans over here. People who believe that Tolkien is about so much more than just, you know, some cool books, but that he's got so much wisdom to impart to us. And that's really the heart of this show. It's about all the just amazing insights into this thing called life that we all are a part of, and that Tolkien brings to the table throughout his works and his letters and everything he seemed to have written, and the way he lived his life and the way he expressed himself. There's just so much so many amazing things. One of the topics that's been on my mind lately, and I want to do an actual topical episode on this soon, is this idea of the shadow, right? So the shadow is this thing in Tolkien's works, which he refers to in various contexts. And it's a really fascinating concept. It's like, what does he mean exactly by that? So sometimes he'll be referring to something very specific, like the shadow is in like the shadow of Sauron or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also just this thing that is ever present, like over the world of Middle Earth, right? And I think that's because he sensed it being ever present in his own life over the world, mm-hmm. right? The shadow is something that is over us all. Right. And it always makes me think when I hear him talk about the shadow in various contexts. Before I say, what would that make you think of, Greta?
The shadow.
Yeah,
I was thinking about it, and I think shadows, you know, when you think about just a shadow, it's a reflection of something, right? But it's it's kind of a nebulous reflection. It's not, you know, it's not a specific, the outlines can be a little, or are just kind of blurred a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. But you only get a shadow if there's in the presence of light.
Okay.
So, I feel like it's a really big question, because I feel like it can be very indefinable, but right. also very concrete as well. So anyway, I guess specifically a shadow or the shadow, you just kind of think of a darkness
uh-huh.
that's a result of the light being blocked, mm-hmm. basically, right?
Yeah.
So it's just kind of it's an absence of light. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
What do you think?
I was just going to say, in this specific context, like the shadow of death from Psalm 23, right? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and where I was going with that was just to say that the shadow, I feel like, was something that was over Tolkien his whole life, right? First, in the death of his father before he really even knew his father. Second, in the death of his mother at a pretty young age, right? Leaving him and his brother orphans. Mm-hmm. And then in the shadow of the First World War, right? Where he saw so many people die.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had friends die.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think to myself, no wonder the shadow was this thing for him, right? Because the shadow is this all-encompassing thing of, like, the shadow of the limited nature of our existence, right?
Yeah.
Here on this earth.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a reminder of our mortality.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, and it's, I don't know, that's been on my mind. Like I said, I want to do a whole episode on that one topic and kind of the different references to the shadow throughout the works of Middle Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to, that kind of segues though into the first piece of correspondence that I wanted to cover. And this is from Mary, who was the listener who we read her first letter to us last week and on the last episode. And she is a blind listener. And so we were really moved by her note to us and, you know, just really appreciated that. And so she wrote back first to confirm that I was pronouncing her name correctly. So that's always reassuring. Because I always seem to get myself into these situations where I forget to ask before I mention people on air. And then I'm like, ooh, I hope I pronounced it right. So I'm glad I got it right. But she wrote a really beautiful note in response and just follow that up. So I wanted to start there. So the subject is Estelle, etc. Greetings once again. Yes, you did pronounce my name correctly. My full name is Marianne, but I prefer the shorter version. Mm-hmm. Would you please let me know which episodes address the subject of religion and Tolkien? I would love to hear them, and it's sometimes difficult for me to scroll through lists of episodes. So I did send her that list of episodes on religion. By the way, I'm in a constant process of building out the, all of the content we have on the site, even for older episodes, which I didn't really do a great job of, like, making posts for those originally. So... if you're searching for specific topics, just go to TolkienRoad.com and type in that topic into the search engine. I'm always trying to improve the way that internal search engine works on our site. So you can just search for it. But there's a category for religion and for, you know, Christianity and that kind of thing. She goes on to say, I do indeed have wonderful friends. The two who read The Silmarillion to me spent two marathon weekends doing it. I fed them tuna sandwiches, which made us all laugh, and sat attentively through the whole thing. So yeah,
that's
a nice touch. I'm not sure if that was on purpose or you know, if that was just accidental when they got to tuna.
A coincidence.
But yeah,
yeah.
Finally, here's the quotation I referred to in my last message, and this is kind of the substance of what I wanted to talk about here. So this is from Athrabeth. Finrod Aandreth. I think I got that right. Athrabeth Finrod Aandreth, which is the dialogue of Finrod and Aandreth, right? So the context here is, this is from The History of Middle-earth, Volume 10, I believe. And this is a dialogue between Finrod, right? Finrod Felagund, famous elf of the First Age, and a human woman, right? So a mortal woman, right? And this is a very long dialogue, and we'll cover this soon. This is on my short list of things to cover soon. So here's what Mary excerpts for us. Finrod says, "Have ye then no hope?" And Aandreth responds, "What is hope? An expectation of good, which though uncertain has some foundation in what is known? Then we have none." And Finrod replies, "That is one thing that men call hope. Amdir we call it, looking up. But there is another which is founded deeper. Estel, we call it, that is trust. It is not defeated by the ways of the world, for it does not come from experience, but from our nature and first being. If we are indeed the Erhuin, the children of the One, then he will not suffer himself to be deprived of his own, not by any enemy, not even by ourselves. This is the last foundation of Estelle, which we keep even when we contemplate the end. Of all his designs, the issue must be for his children's joy. So she says, I especially love the last few sentences beginning with, Estelle, we call it. I memorized the quotation from that point to the end, and it was those words which bolstered my faith when my mom and later my brother died. And I know in my case with the death of my brother and the death a couple of years ago and the death of my father earlier this year, you know, I don't know. I've always leaned heavily on this idea of a hope and trust that goes beyond the world. And, and I get into this, and again, I think to myself, like, this is like Tolkien was all through his life discovering how all of these things were. It's like they were, you know, why was he so into creating these things in the first place, right? Why did he feel compelled to create these things in the first place? And I think he was very, you know, he had a very wide internal landscape, and he was just constantly like discovering himself through his creative works, right? And why were these things on his heart? And he landed later in life on that he was creating this thing that was kind of this mythology that somehow synced up with the story of Christ, right? That somehow, and it was a precursor to the story of Christ. And he was working that out all along the way. And so it really struck me when Andreth, who is the mortal woman right here, right, says, what is hope? And, you know, for a Christian, right, the hope is a rock solid thing, right? Hope is one of the theological virtues. It's founded on the resurrection, right? It's founded on the resurrection of Christ. And so the escape from death through that means, right? But for Andreth, she wouldn't have known that, right? She wouldn't have known who Christ was, right? Because she lived thousands of years before him, right?
Yeah.
And so she says, an expectation of good, which though uncertain has some foundation in what is known, then we have none, right? So she's like, mortal, I'm a mortal. I have no hope, right? I have no hope. I have no expectation of good beyond, like, founded on what is known. Right. And so when a Christian speaks of hope, he's speaking of something that's founded on what is known. Right. So Finrod goes on to say, that is one thing that men call hope. Amdir, we call it looking up. But there is another which is founded deeper. Estelle, we call it. That is trust. And that's really like, and this thing, I think, has always existed for people. Right. It's this deeper down thing that, like, where did we come from? We're here for some purpose, and there's too much of this thing that seems to be the good for there to be nothing in the end, right? For all of it to amount to nothing in the end, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah. So it's almost like there's this sense of, you know, we glimpse here like the early, you know, I mean, this is a religious dialogue, right? This is an early religious dialogue, because what do they refer to themselves as? They both refer to themselves as the children of the One, right? Mm-hmm. That we're both the children of Eru Iluvatar, right? Elves and men. And so, it's basically the argument of, like, as a good father, he's not going to, you know, suffer himself to be separated from us, right? I look at this and I think that Tolkien, one of the things that Tolkien was trying to do through his works was kind of map out what hope looked like before Christianity, right? Before the resurrection of Christ. I see that in other things he's written. And it's in his essay on Beowulf, right? The Monster and the Critics. He actually kind of makes some allusions to this idea over in that work. So, and I've seen it in other places as well. I love that quote as well, Mary. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just really appreciate you sharing it with us. And it makes me that much more excited to get to, the Othrabeth and me. I feel like with a lot of these works, I want to get there, but I'm like, I want to do it justice as well. So I don't want to like try to rush getting there to do it. So, but I'm glad to like deal with it piecemeal. There's some other really interesting things in there that connect to this same kind of issue. So yeah, I just really, really think that's a cool quote and appreciate you sharing it with us, Mary.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting to me too how, I mean, clearly hope feeds trust, right? Like you can't, they have a very symbiotic relationship. You can't really have one without the other.
Right.
Right. So it's just a good reminder. Just, you know, regardless of what you're facing, what's going on, as long as you've got hope, then trust isn't far away.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. So the next topic we'll be looking at is Enya. So
like the artist Enya?
Yeah. So the way this came about is a long time ago on, we've probably referred to Enya on a few different episodes. We probably referred to her when we talked about the Peter Jackson film of Fellowship, because that's where, you know, her music plays a prominent role in that. But we also, I guess we also referred to Enya in episode 71 when we talked about the chapter Farewell to Lorien from The Lord of the Rings. And one of our YouTube subscribers, followers, frequent correspondents, is James Failinger, and he drops a lot of really interesting stuff, like very long comments and full of pretty incredible knowledge. And so I'm very appreciative of that, James. He on this episode, he commented several things about our references to Enya. So I'm going to try to cover these because I know we both appreciate Enya, and I like James's appreciation of her as well and her work. So let me pull up one of these. Let's see. We'll go with I believe this is the first one he left. He says there was a great article in the New York Times Magazine last weekend, and the title of it was "Who Can Say Why Enya Endures." So I think he's actually excerpted part of this. So I'm going to read a little bit of it. Even at her peak, she was hugely famous, but never especially cool. But maybe we're finally ready to heed her whispered call to awaken. And this is by Seamus O'Reilly on September 7th. On the long drives through Ireland that peppered my childhood, my father played songs from a small pool of classic albums. Many of these would be familiar to any Irishman from that time. But none of those artists struck me like my father's personal favorite, Enya. My father's fascination with Enya was mysterious. Her music wasn't like anything else he listened to. It enraptured a man so Catholic he would interrupt family holidays with cheerful visits to Marian shrines. The global success of this melange of Irish traditional music and New Age electronica was unlikely, given that the bulwark of her fandom, in Ireland at least, appeared to be people like my father, rank traditionalists entering middle age, few of whom would have countenanced synthesizers, arpeggiated strings, or heavy reverb in any other oral context. I, a youthful devotee of ambient music, loved Enya for her place in that genre's canon. It just confused me to see my father similarly moved. After all, even Aphex Twin's most soothing ambient works often made him unplug my CD player, as if their non-traditional musical forms might damage our wiring. How then could Enya reduce this same man to tears? It helped that she was local. As a child, Ithan Brennan grew up not far from my home in one of the most prestigious families in the history of Irish traditional music. She departed from the Brennan's band, Clannad, at a young age, and crafted a strange musical form that was all her own. By the time I was an adolescent, the shy little sister of Clannad had become one of the biggest selling recording artists on earth. When I was a teenager, Enya was hugely famous, but never especially cool, at least not among people my age. For all her peculiar complexity, my classmates wrote Enya off as easy listening, on par with panpipe Muzak. This skepticism was probably because of the mythological visual style that Enya built around herself. She lived in a castle, rarely gave interviews, or performed live. Her videos present her as an ethereal being, surrounded at all times by 400 lit candles, wearing a wardrobe bequeathed to her by a fairy queen who had too many velvet capes lying around and hated to see them go to waste. This imagery made Enya a world unto herself. That's pretty solid tribute, I'd say, right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And again, that's not by James. He shared that. That's by this fella, Seamus O'Reilly. And I'm going to read a couple of other notes from James here on the same subject. So
I love that mental picture he gave at the end.
Right.
It's like so spot on too. The little bit that I've seen of Enya music videos, that's it. Like, she did get her wardrobe from a fairy queen who had too many capes.
Yeah. So he James goes on to comment, I guess we referred to Enya as a guilty pleasure at one point in that episode. He said, you know, Tolkien himself is a guilty pleasure for many people. I found out in college, circa 1971, what the academic left thinks of Tolkien when I encountered Catherine R. Stimson's excoriating little monograph on him in the Columbia Essays on Modern Writers series. And I'm not sure academic opinion has changed much in the half century since then. In that 1996 documentary narrated by Judi Dench, A Film Portrait of J.R.R. Tolkien, English professor Verlyn Flieger is one of the interviewees, and she says that she's very judicious about revealing her love for Tolkien to acquaintances. She has to get to know somebody before deciding to trust them with that fact about herself. One academically sophisticated person, himself an author, told me that Aragorn's role in the story as the rightful king is an illustration of the leader principle, a phrase more notorious in its original German. So, by the way, what he's referring to in that is the... I think it's the Führerprinzip, which was this thing that I think it may have existed prior to the Nazis, but the Nazis kind of co-opted it and used it to, like, you know, obviously make this cult of the Führer with Hitler. And I think that's what James is making reference to there. The suggestion, continuing with James's comment, the suggestion being that if you like that sort of thing, you'd better watch out. It might be a symptom of your being a, he says, a not zebra, which is a, he said, a word deliberately obscured to escape the eye of Sauron. Maybe that's why my my video Tolkien versus the Nazis is you know, doesn't have a billion views, because it's amazing and you all should go watch it. Anyway, moving on. Given the political polarization that's accelerated since the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings films 2 decades ago, or even the Hobbit films a decade ago, I wonder if Amazon has really thought through the potential hornet's nest they're stepping into with a Tolkien TV series. Mm-hmm. I mean, I myself would have no problem with dark-skinned Numenoreans or even elves, but Amazon will be in an impossible position on this score. They'll be roundly condemned from certain quarters if they do it, people screaming woke, and just as vociferously condemned from other quarters if they don't. Why do all the good guys look as if they're carved out of Wonder Bread? Mm. So, yeah, pretty wide-ranging comment, but I'll just focus on the bit about the guilty pleasure. You know, I mean, as much as, like, Tolkien has taken off since those days, and Tolkien, you know, like, everybody now knows who Tolkien is, it's a cultural phenomenon. Lord of the Rings is a cultural phenomenon. It's still kind of a guilty pleasure. Like, I mean, I don't just, like, when I meet new people, the first thing I say is not, like, I have a Tolkien podcast, right? I'll bring it up. It's not like I'm hiding it, but I'm like, if it was some other kind of podcast, I may be like, hey, check out my podcast where I talk about everything, right? But it's like, you know, even still, it's kind of, it's as large as the fandom is, it's kind of niche. And it's the kind of thing where, you know, if you're not into Tolkien, then you know you're probably gonna think it's kind of weird, right? It's like, what is there to talk about beyond, like, the movies, right? So, you know, for a lot of people, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, I think that's true.
So, you know, but I almost feel like we live in an age that's like post guilty pleasures. You know, it's like, if you dig something, then, like, why do you dig it, right? Like, why? There's mm-hmm. no reason to feel guilty about that. You know, I remember. Like, there were. I used to think of somebody like Phil Collins as a guilty pleasure, and I'm just like, no, Phil Collins is awesome, right?
Yeah, yeah, you got to own it, because I feel like when you use the term guilty pleasure, it implies some kind of shame, or, you know, like, that you're somehow embarrassed by the fact that you enjoy this.
Mm-hmm.
But if you truly love something, you shouldn't be embarrassed about it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's funny. That's a funny term, guilty pleasure.
Well, I mean, it's I know where it came from, and I think mm-hmm. it's just we live in a post guilty pleasure age, because, you know, it's so easy to find people now who are into the same things you are, right? Mm-hmm. Into the, like, little sub niche of things that you're into, right? And so I'm sure there's probably, like, Enya fan podcast or, like, Enya fan YouTube channels out there that are just into that. And it's funny, like, you know, it'll be funny when if you meet, like, somebody who's, like, a total, like, metalhead or something, like, just really into, like, metal or maybe, like, really into, like, you mm-hmm. know, like rap or something like that. And they're like, oh, mm-hmm. man, I love Enya. Right. You know, yeah. And it's just like,
yeah, it doesn't seem to fit. Right. Yeah. And I think that's the other piece of a guilty pleasure, is it tends to go against what mm-hmm. how people perceive you.
Yeah.
And once you're able to get past the fact that who cares what people think of me, it no longer becomes a guilty pleasure, because right. you just own it. you know?
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you're not wrapped up in what the world or what anybody else thinks of you, yeah, you're absolutely right. We're in a post-guilty pleasure society.
I think it's good just to think about, like, why do you like the things that, you know, that you mm-hmm. really appreciate?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, what is it that appeals to you about mm-hmm. them? And I think, mm-hmm. So that's where the third comment here from James on this same subject is, he says, Indias may it be in, Nai Huruvaye, and Enya's may it be in Tolkien's loose translation of Galadriel's farewell lament in the chapter. This line is rendered as, maybe thou shalt find Valimar. However, in the detailed word-for-word translation of the Quenya song and other notes given as an appendix to the printed version of Donald Swan's song cycle, The Road Goes Ever On, Tolkien points out that rather than speculating on a possibility, could be you'll find Valimar, Galadriel was instead expressing a wish or a hope for Frodo. Nay, I is an imperative. Be it that, let it be that, or may it be that. The may it be in the title and lyrics of Enya's and Roma Ryan's end credit song for the Peter Jackson Fellowship movie is pretty clearly an allusion to Galadriel's may it be. So
this is making me want to go put on an Enya CD right now.
Well, and just that, you know,
and
just
rewatch the credits.
Just maybe. that song. I remember like that. Like, I'd heard Enya before, and I think, and I just remember, like, how awesome that song is in that movie specifically, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like it just sets the perfect ending to that first, to the Fellowship, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's my favorite Enya song by far. I like a lot of her other music, too. I like a lot of her other songs, but that song is just so beautiful. I mean, it's just it's the longing that goes beyond the walls of this world,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like in a song.
Yeah. It's longing for that hope, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It totally is. And so I feel like it's, you know, I don't know, who knows if Tolkien would have appreciated Enya or not, but I think her music strikes me as something like the genius of Tolkien, right? It's like a genius that, you know, it's kind of musically akin, right? In some ways to what Tolkien was in terms of literature. It's like, oh, people with good taste don't appreciate, you know, don't like Tolkien, right? Kind of like, you know, the thing with Verlin Flieger and Guilty Pleasures, right? And, you know, like highbrow tastes, you know, we don't like Tolkien. And I think the same thing, because I've been a music snob for years, right? And so I remember, like, it would have been weird, like, amongst my friends, like, who like to talk about, like, the coolest new music and everything, if, like, I was like, yo, dudes, heard that new Enya album,
mm-hmm.
right? It would have been like, what?
I feel like I have this very vague memory of when you and I were first getting to know each other. I, like, loved Enya.
Probably.
Like, I had all of her albums. And I remember I was, like, a little scared to tell you that I liked Enya, because you had proclaimed yourself as this crazy music nerd or whatever. I was like, oh, he's not gonna like me if he knows that I like Enya, or he'll look down on me or whatever. And then I remember being shocked that you're like, oh my gosh, I love Enya.
Yeah,
so funny.
Well, and I don't know, maybe I was deliberately, like, toning it down just to you know, make sure I didn't
still be cool.
Didn't offend you, but
yeah.
But at some point, maybe then or maybe later, it did develop into a genuine appreciation
mm-hmm.
for her. And so I guess that the thing is, like, Tolkien literary circles, maybe he is that or was that. And it's
mm-hmm.
the same thing with Enya. It's like in musical circles, maybe she was that at one point. But I think people just at some point you move beyond the whole guilty pleasure thing. And it's like,
yeah.
I like this and I think it's awesome. And I think you guys are crazy for not thinking it's as
Absolutely.
Awesome as I do.
Absolutely. Whenever I hear the name Enya, I'm always reminded by this comment my brother used to make fun of me, like, ruthlessly for many things, but especially for my love of Enya.
Uh-huh.
And I still remember him saying to me, well, you know, I think it was like some VH1 Music Award or MTV Music Award or something. He's like, well, you know, Enya won the Most Unnecessary Album of the Year award. And I was like, I was so offended by that initially. And but now, like, in light of our conversation, I'm like, I kind of love that. Like,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of what makes it so great, is who wants something that's necessary, right? I mean, having it be unnecessary is part of the appeal.
Well, let's be honest too, like, who even cares what MTV thinks
right
anymore?
Oh, for sure, right? For sure. But I don't know why that I always remember, oh yeah, one most unnecessary, I'm like, whatever. But anyway, it's just funny.
Yeah,
it's just a funny, yeah, well, thing, like, that makes me chuckle.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also realize it's part of the appeal.
That's a badge of honor.
That's exactly what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I mean, totally. Yeah.
Well, James, thank you.
Yeah, that was
thank
really
you for the epic comments on
super fun
on Enya. Yeah. Really mm-hmm. good stuff there. Like, James is leaving a lot of great comments on our past episodes, and it's fun to go back and revisit, because, like, I have no idea what we talked about in some of those episodes now. And so, other than just we talked about that chapter. And so it was cool to, like, see, like, oh, I guess we talked about India a lot in that episode. Yeah. All right. Next one is a very short comment. And this is on my video of Tolkien versus the Nazis, or Tolkien versus the Nazebras, as James might refer to them. And this is a comment by Bruno Kamel. And Bruno says, I don't consider myself a Tolkien fan, but the Tolkien was racist hot take always made me cringe.
Mm.
Yeah, it's truly, like, a horrible take, but it is a not like completely, you know, underground take either, and it will probably rear its ugly head again when Amazon's show officially launches.
Mm.
Because some people just can't help themselves. But anyway, it's glad to hear that even from somebody who's not a Tolkien fan. But my question for you, Bruno, is what are you waiting for? Why aren't you a Tolkien fan?
Right.
So if you're looking for my video on Tolkien versus the Nazis, like, then maybe you want to be a Tolkien fan. So how can we help? How can we help? Let me know. Talk to me.
That's our key question for this episode.
That's right.
How can we help?
How can we help? Next up is a couple of notes from Tom McArdle, who is a longtime listener and patron. And Tom commented on, so I posted both the audio for both of my books, Tolkien's Requiem and Tolkien's Overture, over on YouTube. Go over there, check it out, listen to them. The whole thing's over there. I've re-recorded it, so it's much higher quality than the first time I did the audiobooks. And so you need to do yourselves a favor and go over there and check them out. But Tom just finished listening to Tolkien's Overture, and he left a couple of comments that he left a lot of comments, actually, but he left a couple that I wanted to mention. First off, he said, almost through it. From now on, when I list the books that are among my favorites, this one will be named.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
That's
right?
Really,
that's
cool.
I never thought I'd write a book that would be on somebody's list of their favorites. So thank you, Tom. That's really
awesome.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I'm delighted that you're delighted by the book, honestly. And then when he finished, he left a longer comment and said, what a wonderful work. All the things I want to say are clogging up in my mind. I know the feeling well. This is why I started a podcast, because it was like I had to get all these things out. Tom says, I learned to write poetry and ultimately songs by reading Tolkien. The power of music is very real to me. Even in scripture, we see the power of David's playing to help King Saul. Mm-hmm. I think Galadriel's farewell to the fellowship might be my favorite. I wrote this pale shadow of a poem last year, and maybe you will see the inspiration I took from her words. Many blessings to you. And I think the title is Outwardly.
Of the poem.
Right, the title of the poem. The more I learn, feel, discover, the less I have to say. Weight of grief, flights of joy, yearnings inexpressible. Thoughts will not coalesce, words fail, before they occur to me. Oh, the depth, the height, the length and breadth. Yet outwardly I manage a slight, quiet smile, a wistful, twinkling eye. They do not hint of all that I know and feel and hope for, but I can't comprehend or even begin to try to speak of.
Hmm.
So
that's beautiful.
That is beautiful. That's awesome, Tom. And I appreciate mm-hmm. you sharing that. You know, it made me think of, so one of the things I do on a fairly regular basis is I pray what's called the Liturgy of the Hours. And, the Liturgy of the Hours is a ancient Christian tradition, like prayer tradition. And, it's basically like you pray through the Psalms, and then you do some various readings from scripture and from other, like, kind of ancient Christian writers. And the key cornerstone of it is praying the Psalms at different times of the day, right? So you're praying these things written by some guy in Israel, you know, 3,000 years ago. And you're like, why am I doing this? But what I've learned along the way is that, like, how more and more over, like, over the years, I know the Psalms much better now. And second of all, like, I identify with them, and I feel not only like what the writer himself was writing, but I feel all of these other emotions of like other people and like this connectedness to the rest of humanity through them. Right. And I don't know, today I was praying them and I just felt particularly, grateful for them. And it's a way, like, at some points you'll be praying them and you'll just kind of spontaneously like enter into this dialogue, with God. Right. And just, you know, you feel this much deeper connection because the Psalms, so many of them are like, it's not all praise and happiness, right? There's a lot of really dark passages, and you hear in these things like the groanings of every other human person, right? That's living under the shadow. And I guess this is all how it connects back, right? The groanings of living under the shadow of having to deal with the death of loved ones, of having to deal with injustice, of having to deal with all of the things that we have to deal with as human beings that are painful to deal with. And so, you know, I guess, Tom, your words here inspired me to say that, and I'm not entirely sure why, but I think it just has to do with this kind of sense of like words fail me, you know, but like, and I want to be able to express all of these things. And it's almost like through the Psalms, I can express all of the things that are welled up in my heart when I'm praying them, you know, which is cool because, you know, one of the reasons we do pray them as Christians is because Jesus would have prayed them, right? Mm. So we're uniting ourselves with him when we pray them. So anyway, just a really beautiful note, Tom. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And I feel like it brings to mind things that are on our heart that we may not even realize are there.
Oh, yeah.
And it helps us give voice to those fears and, you know, thanksgivings, whatever. Yeah,
making sense of the world around us, you know, and all of its problems as well.
Yeah,
right. All the things that are just assaulted upon us every day, right? So yeah. Well, Tom, thank you so much.
Yeah.
I appreciate your appreciation, my friend. Very much so. All right. So next up, we have a note from. Actually, I'm going to save this one until a later time because that's kind of a longer topic. But next up, we're going to go with a couple of notes from Johann Herrenberg. And these are from September 8th. So Johann was commenting on our episode 255, Lord of the Rings, Religious and Catholic. What did Tolkien mean? He said, I read Lord of the Rings as a 12-year-old. 40 years later, I converted to Catholicism. In hindsight, I understand my own road far better and Tolkien as well. I commend you for tackling this subject.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so,
It's not for the faint of heart, that's for sure.
It's not. Well, I don't know. It's one that's been on my heart for a long time. But
right, but it still takes courage to get it out there.
You. That's what I appreciate saying. That.
You're welcome.
I was just going to comment on Johann's note. It's interesting, like, it's almost like a seed that's, you know, germinating within you that whole time, right? You know, this seed of Lord of the Rings. And in my own road to Catholicism had to do with a seed being planted, you know, I think very much so by Tolkien and by his works. And not that that was the first thing that would have caused me to, but I think it was something about Lord of the Rings had an undeniable effect on me and causing me to journey farther down that road and to be open and open more and more to it. Right. So, and I know many people with that same story. So it's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's see. And then he also said the extraordinary thing about Tolkien is that he was the Aquinas of his own created world. Mm-hmm. So Aquinas, of course, St. Thomas Aquinas, he's kind of one of the preeminent theologians, one of the doctors of the church. And he wrote, he had an amazing mind, like a kind of an amazing mind that's just able to sort of like tackle individual questions. And he had a very like great methodology for doing that. And, you know, just all kinds of questions when it comes to like nature. And I mean, he wasn't just a theologian. He was very much a philosopher. In fact, he may have been more of a philosopher than a theologian. Mm. But I think that's very true, Johan, and I think I commented to Johan that I think the new book, The Nature of Middle-earth, really shows that, you know, that Tolkien was the Aquinas of his own, you know, of his own sub-created world. Mm-hmm. So,
I love that connection. That's
good. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. All right. All right. I think we are going to call it an episode on that. So, still got so much correspondence to get to. Don't know what we'll get to on the next episode. I know we'll be getting Carl Hostetter back on here soon. We're in touch, and I'm trying to schedule that date. So very much looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. Greta, any parting thoughts for us?
No, I love our fans. Yeah. I love our listeners, and I love that they send us such amazing correspondence.
Yeah,
I love these. Are my favorite episodes, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it went so well last week. I was like, let's do another one. Mm-hmm. And the challenge for me is always thinking what to title it so that people want to listen, want to give it a start, because I know that once they're in, they'll want to listen, right?
Yep.
But, you know, I mean, I really love the idea of this being something that we can increasingly create together as a bunch of fans of Tolkien.
Yes. And the community aspect is really, really cool.
It is. It is. Yeah, for sure. So very grateful for all of you.
Indeed.
All right. So thanks to our amazing patrons, especially the following: Andrew T.
John R.
Ms. Anonymous.
Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien.
Shannon S.
Brian O.
Emilio P.
Zeke F.
James A.
James L.
Chris L.
Chuck F.
Asya V.
Ish of the Hammer.
Teresa C.
David of Pints with Jack.
Jonathan D.
Eric S.
Joey S.
Eric B.
Johanna T.
Mike M.
Robert H.
Paul D.
Julia.
And Wer T.
As well as those celebrating their Patreon anniversary in September, Johanna T.
Dustin Q.
And Robert S.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, y'all, and we will talk at you next time.
Yes, we will.
Bye.
Bye, guys.